This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
20 years ago, this coming January, in spite of massive popular resistance, the Canadian government signed a major so-called free trade agreement, and NAFTA was its acronym. Several similar agreements have been negotiated since then, and the latest of these is the TPP agreement, standing for Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. It is one of the most comprehensive and least known to Canadians. To explore what's happening with the TPP and why it is most important that Canadians know, we've contacted Stuart True, who is trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians. Welcome back to Red Eye, Stuart.
Thanks very much, James.
The TPP has been referred to as a trade agreement, but is it accurate to even call it a trade agreement?
It's accurate when you're talking about two of the chapters. So, I mean, this is a 29, I think, or 30 chapter agreement, and we know two of them have to do with trade. But in fact, the other, 28 or 27 have to do with essentially rewriting the rules of government. What can you do as a society to regulate for public safety reasons, to regulate to protect the environment? It's basically a set of rules that is designed to make it easier for corporations to profit. And so that, of course, means downward pressure on standards. It means letting them take jobs and put them wherever they want to make the most money. That's essentially what it is. We understand these deals to be more like corporate constitutions, really, a very rigid set of corporate rules that are designed to keep governments in check.
Now, few people seem to have heard of this. How secret have the negotiations been?
They've been very secret. And in fact, there was a round of talks in Salt Lake City this past week. I think they're just wrapping up. And groups that were down there to protest the talks said they were the most secretive yet. There wasn't even the usual opportunity to get in there and speak to some of the negotiators from the 12 countries, as has happened in past negotiating rounds. So they were already very quiet set of talks, and they're getting more quiet as people learn, I think, more about the details of the deal. They're having to kind of bring it back together and get it done as quickly as possible. And I think that's absolutely the goal of the Canadian government. I mean, we've heard almost nothing from the Harper government about why they're negotiating this with the U.S. and the 11 other countries, what they hope to achieve, what the consequences will be for Canada. We have complete radio silence from this government in particular on the TPP, and I think that's very much on purpose because it purposely keeps the public out of the discussion.
Now, the doors on the negotiations have been opened just ever so slightly by WikiLeaks, having hacked into some of the secret documents. And so what do they reveal about the negotiations so far?
Well, James, I think that's a good example of how the TPP is not about trade. So the leaks that came out from WikiLeaks last week, and thank God for WikiLeaks, actually, for making this information public, had to do with intellectual property rights. And so that involves patent protections for brand name drugs and other monopoly rights for drug makers. It involves copyright. There's going to be new rules on the internet that restrict the internet freedom, that constrain innovation, economic innovation, and actually kind of invade privacy as well. A very pro-Hollywood, big American entertainment sector version of the internet, which is, of course, very much more corporatized. And we really saw all of that in black and white when WikiLeaks released that chapter last week. What we also saw, though, was a lot of countries pushing back against some of these worst parts of the TPP on drug patents, for example. We see Canada and a group of countries pushing back against patent extension, pushing back against, the U.S. desire to patent medical treatment methods, right? I mean, this is amazing that you would be able to patent a dosage, for example, of a certain pill versus the pill itself. So there's some hope in the documents. Countries are pushing back. We see there's a lot of, there's some tension there that might exist in other chapters as well, but we just don't know. But I think, again, it's just a really good example of how the TPP is more about giving more profits, I suppose, more power to corporations than it is about really increasing legitimate trade or even creating competition. I mean, this is about shutting competition out, essentially, of the drug market and letting big pharma make as much money as they want for much longer.
Now, all the attention's been focused on the United States with the release of these documents through WikiLeaks. Can you speculate at all what this may mean for Canada in particular, you know, despite their secrecy?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, in many ways, trying to talk to the federal government right now, the current government, about trade is basically talking to a brick wall. The Harper government has said, I think at the Conservative convention a few months ago, or actually it was just a month ago in Calgary there, we don't care what our opponents think. I mean, this kind of transcends policy issues, and certainly on trade it is literally like talking to a brick wall. But there are a lot of groups in Canada that are using these WikiLeaks to say, hang on a second, you know, you're not going far enough to oppose some of these U.S. demands. There's a real risk here that Canada is going to be required to change its copyright law completely again, and we just went through a long 10-year process to find the right balance between, you know, copyright holders and users of this knowledge and users of the information. Why would you just in the stroke of a pen, in a signature on a trade deal, change all of that and give much more power to the rights holders themselves? I think that's something that in Canada will be very difficult to pass by the people when or if they do get a chance to have that debate. But I think the WikiLeaks is also going to draw attention to the secrecy of the negotiations, draw attention to the fact that they're happening. And I think that this interview is a good example of that, is people will be paying more attention, I think, from this point on. And that's important because they are, as much as they're do seem to be these differences between the U.S. and other country positions, they're saying they're quite confident they can get this done by the end of 2013. And if that's the case, we're going to need to be on guard and watching much more closely to make sure the Harper government can't just ram this through Parliament as they're inclined to do with these kinds of trade agreements.
What are the objectives, do you think, that are underlying the entire process of this treaty? Is it just corporate rights, or is there some geopolitical significance?
It sounds like it's a little bit of both. Absolutely, the geopolitical goal of the United States is to isolate China. I mean, in many ways, they have a new Pacific strategy that involves a military strategy. The TPP is part of its economic isolation strategy. In the last 10 years, we've seen the region, the Asia-Pacific region, actually grabbing hold of, I guess, to some extent, their, a lot of economic clout. They're now, of course, the manufacturing powerhouse. I mean, they really are, they're seizing a different model of economic development. I mean, whether you support it or not, this kind of idea of state-led capitalism has led to obviously some economic success, although it's not being distributed all that fairly, obviously, in China and the region. But the goal is definitely to give U.S. multinational capital a leg up, you know, so give it new tools that it can, you know, basically beat back this idea of Chinese state-led capitalism in the interest of just making more profits for the American, you know, the American dream, essentially, the American corporations. So that's really the general geopolitical situation of what's going on with the TPP. It's also, to some extent, about, you know, shoring together people who are countries that are of the same mind. So if you look at Latin America, the countries that aren't involved in the TPP in Latin America are the ones that are pursuing a different development model, the ones that are looking at more balanced regional integration that would redistribute wealth perhaps a little bit more equally. No, it's Peru, and it's Chile, and it's Mexico who are the Latin American partners in the TPP, and of course they're the Kool-Aid drinkers when it comes to, you know, corporate globalization or neoliberal capitalism, whatever you want to call it. So that's really what's going on here too, is it's a shoring up of the like-minded countries, an attempt to force new rules onto China and the region, break down the state aspect of state-led capitalism, and to make sure that, you know, money continues to flow up to the top of these U.S. corporations. I think that's generally how I see this.
Now, assuming activists are successful in being able to slow this down or maybe even halt the negotiations, what would people gain by this if we were able to stop the TPP from going through?
Well, I think we'd, I mean, in one basic sense, we'd gain a bit of breathing space. I mean, we've seen since the WTO negotiations stall in 2006, just an explosion of bilateral free trade agreements. You know, they're trying to force this agenda very quickly in every direction they can, do an end run around the WTO. And I think that by stopping the TPP, we actually, we put a stop to that furthering of this corporate agenda. And it gives us that breathing room, that time to think and ask, you know, is this really the best way to create jobs in Canada? Has it done anything to help us address the climate crisis? I don't think you can say that it has. Is it helping us eliminate poverty, or is it creating more poverty? I mean, I think we really do need to stand right in front of these agreements, because in every one of those cases, they're actually making things worse. So we're much better off if the agreements fail, but it doesn't mean we're scot-free. I mean, there's obviously a lot of changes we need to make to the way we live, the policies we have, the priorities we have. I mean, I think climate change is probably a much bigger priority than you know, a few extra dimes in profit to these corporations. So I think that's what we gain by stopping these deals. We gain we basically gain momentum to roll back some of the worst changes that have been made through this free trade era, and to start thinking about how we fix those and how we design our societies and our communities much better.
Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, next year marks the 20th anniversary of the NAFTA trade agreement. Is there anything being considered to connect that with the opposition to the TPP?
There is, in fact, and there will be in BC. The BC region has been very, I guess, probably much more engaged on this than other parts of Canada so far. But obviously, groups across the country will be looking to use the 20th anniversary to reflect on how NAFTA has really affected Canada, because we're going to hear a lot about, well, trade tripled between the three countries, and therefore it's unambiguously good for everyone. But in fact, we're going to use that opportunity next year to talk about the effects, like we just mentioned, the worsening climate, the worsening in income inequality, the gutting of our manufacturing sector in basically all three countries, the depression of wages. I mean, this is really a result of this model. In BC, there's going to be, our regional office there in Vancouver knows much more about this, but there will be a march of some kind on January 1st, I believe. And so there's preparations for that. And I encourage people to go to our website, Canadians.org, and get in touch with the Vancouver office if they're interested in getting involved. And then there's going to be events in Mexico as well in January, kind of coming together of a lot of the same groups that were opposed to NAFTA and are thinking through how are we going to use this moment to really sink our teeth into the TPP in this crucial phase.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time and speaking with us this morning, Stuart.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, James.
We've been speaking with Stuart True. He is a trade campaigner for the Council of Canadians, and you can get more information, as Stuart said, by going to Canadians.org.